To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio of the Working Class, by the Working Class, for the Working Class. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host this evening. Our topic is PSU adjuncts ready to strike. My guests are Erica Thomas, an instructor in the University Studies Department and co-chair and chair of communications for the Portland State University Faculty Association, PSUFA, and Vasiliki Tuhuliotis, a teacher in the Honors College and co-chair and chair of the bargaining for PSUFA. Thank you both for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, thanks, Jamie.
PSUFA represents about 1,200 part-time instructors who make up almost half of all instructors at PSU. Many PSU adjuncts also teach at other local universities and community colleges, including Portland Community College, which is now on strike.
I feel like actually I want to just, because I imagine that a lot of your listeners might not have been familiar with the word adjunct, the term adjunct prior to now. So I feel like it would also just be like a good moment to insert that. It also means like slightly different things at different universities, but at PSU and at most places, most higher education institutions, an adjunct is what's referred to as like a casualized employee, there's like all different kinds of terminologies for these employees who are hired contract-based, term-to-term, or course-by-course. In some instances, like at PSU, you can apply, you can sort of be reviewed and get a longer contract than that. We have up to 2-year contracts for adjuncts, which can give people slightly more job security at PSU, but essentially an adjunct is a part-time, less than half-time, researcher or teacher who is hired on a course-by-course, term-by-term basis.
Your unions are subject to some pretty complex laws, and for our listeners who may not be aware, unlike private sector workers whose union management negotiations are determined by the National Labor Relations Act of 1935 and are overseen by the National Labor Relations Board, except for agricultural and domestic workers who do not have the right to unionize or strike, public employees' collective bargaining in Oregon is determined by the Public Employees' Collective Bargaining Act, overseen by the Employee Relations Board. Each state has its own public sector union laws, and public sector unions are not legal in some states, and public sector unions cannot legally strike in some states. Oregon legalized collective bargaining and the right to strike for state, city, county, school, and other public employees in 1973 after a wave of illegal strikes. The PECBA has very restrictive methods and timelines for collective bargaining, established, of course, to dampen strikes and other workplace disruptions. So before we get into the nitty-gritty of your negotiations, tell our listeners how PECBA bargaining works.
The two parties have to be in what's called direct negotiations for 150 days before either party can call for mediation. Once a party calls for mediation, you have to be in mediation for a minimum of 15 days. And after that 15-day threshold, then either party can call for what is called impasse. and at that point, the parties go into what's called a 30-day cooling off period. Then they can exchange last, best, and final offers. And 7 days after that, the union can strike or the employer can implement a contract. So in terms of where PSUFA is, and again, that's the Portland State University Faculty Association, adjunct faculty union, we actually reached 150 days of direct bargaining with the university in July, and then our union called for mediation in February, and our first scheduled mediation session is on April 8th. So we have called for mediation, but mediation has not yet been scheduled, and we have been bargaining for over a year. We started on February 14th of 2025.
Wow. Long time. What is PSUFA's bargaining platform and give our listeners a sense of what are the main sticking points in your negotiations for a labor agreement with the college administration?
One of the main sticking points or one of the main bargaining platforms that we have is job security. And we know that this is a thing that adjuncts feel a lot of economic pressure because of the how their work is. They are temps, and they are often working at multiple institutions. So we actually share a lot of our members of our bargaining unit, our members of PCC, FFAP, working part-time at multiple institutions, sometimes three institutions even. I, for instance, work at two universities at the same time right now. Job security is one of the major bargaining platforms and priorities that our members have. And the other two, at the highest level, the other two that we are fighting the hardest for are pay, fair pay, and what's referred to as academic freedom. Or the freedom to teach and research, and what that means for teachers and researchers at higher education institutions is that they can't be sort of punished for or reprimanded for engaging in political speech that's protected in the classroom. It's further sort of protections for people to research subject matter, for students also to research and present on subject matter in the classroom, and for the faculty member to give space for whatever those subject matters are that the students are interested in. So it's not just something that we're fighting for the teachers. It's also something that's super important to being able to maintain a classroom in which dialogue is able to be had about, political subject matter. Can be protected by our contract. Vasiliki, do you want to add?
Yeah, I just want to say that one thing that's important to know about academic freedom is that it is considered a sort of professional right for faculty members, and it does extend to students. And we currently have language in the collective bargaining agreement on academic freedom, but it's not actually subject to grievances. And so we're in a big fight with the university right now to allow that. To allow language on academic freedom to be grievable, and they're really pushing up against that. So I just want to sort of reiterate again the three kind of, I think, most important pieces of the bargaining platform to kind of sum up what Erica said and then also connect to some broader kind of historical themes around adjuncts. So as Erica said, we're fighting for fair pay, which, for PSU adjuncts, that means equal pay for equal work, right? We have historically been paid less than the full-time faculty is to do the same quality of work. So we've actually tied our economic proposals to the salary rates for senior instructors, full-time faculty, senior instructors. Then, as Erica said, job security. Trying to like mitigate the worst effects of being sort of term to term contracted faculty members, and then academic freedom. I just want to say that adjuncts have served a really important role in the neoliberal university because we are cheap, we are easily disposable, and we are easily repressible. And we were created to be that way. And so, in our fighting for these things, which are very important to our members, and the priorities come out of surveys, but we're also really fighting for a necessary change in the working conditions of what is over half of faculty across this country. We believe that you can't offer a quality education for your students when your faculty is cheap, disposable, and repressible.
Indeed. Well, so tell us about the particularly egregious conduct of the administration, which resulted in PSUFA filing and winning multiple unfair labor practice charges against PSU. Oh, and by the way, if you want to say anything more about sticking points in the negotiations, over a year of sticking points.
Sure, I'm sure we'll come back to this. So I can start telling this story. There's many layers to this story because there are many years of egregious behavior and legal violations. I think it took our union reaching, getting to a point of being strong to actually fight the university on their illegal conduct. But I'll start with really the most kind of egregious thing that acutely affected adjuncts, and then we can, I think, kind of zoom out and look at the other ways that PSU has consistently sought to interfere in or impair the administration of the union. So our union has negotiated for some very important benefits funds for adjunct faculty members. There's an economic hardship fund that's called the Adjunct Financial Assistance Fund, and that's referred to as AFAF. So if you hear me talking about AFAF, that's what I'm talking about, an economic hardship fund for adjuncts, which is particularly important given the kinds of conditions under which adjuncts work and the fact that folks oftentimes face losses of income that are catastrophic, right? Because PSU or another university might pull classes from them, and just because a lot of adjuncts are poor and really, really struggle to survive by cobbling together lots of jobs. So that's the that fund sort of addresses the kind of dire economic circumstances and precarity that a lot of adjuncts face. And there's also a professional development fund that adjuncts can apply to. And a faculty education fund. Well, PSU did a very cruel and illegal thing to adjuncts, which is that it decided, in flagrant violation of labor law, that when our contract expired on June 30th, 2025, that it was no longer obligated to continue to fund applications to those funds. And I can go into the details if you're interested of why that's a violation of labor law. I mean, really quickly, labor law is very explicit that economic benefits of a contract are what's called part of the status quo. So they extend past the official expiration of the contract. PSU, though, however, I believe knowing that they didn't have a strong case, cut off the benefits funds. They did it also without informing the union. They left members of our adjunct faculty union facing eviction. I mean, people went through really, really horrible things. We had to file an unfair labor practice complaint, which the Employment Relations Board recognized how dire this was, and we were granted an expedited hearing. The hearing took place in September, and in early October, we learned that we had prevailed in the unfair labor practice complaint. PSU was found to be in violation of the status quo, and they were also found to have to be to have committed bargaining in bad faith. I want I, it's really important for me to emphasize that the university I think knew what they were doing was illegal, and I don't think they cared because their objective was to harm adjuncts, and which they achieved, to use up our resources, economic and psychic, right? Because they're trying to crush all our souls and use all of our money as a union. And then I also think that they're trying to sow divisiveness in the union, which is why we've talked about this particular egregious act as an instance of union busting. And it feels very important to me that it be framed in that larger context, which we're seeing at the university, both against our union and against the other unions. But I don't want this particular unfair labor practice complaint to also sort of like eclipse this long-standing practice that the university has had of violating labor law and interfering in the administration of the union. And maybe Erica, since I've shared a lot here, maybe you want to kind of talk about this, the other sort of like more historical piece of PSU's ongoing egregious anti-worker behavior.
Yeah, sure. There are many different angles to this, but the thing that is most relevant to this question about the unfair labor practice is that the university has historically provided us with has not provided us, I guess I should say, with like their legally obligated data about their employees who are members of our bargaining unit. So, employers are required to provide unions with data, and in this instance, they were required to provide us like new employee information, for example, within 10 days of hire. They historically had like almost never done that. They do provide us with some data, but the data is often inaccurate, late, or just sort of like includes people who are not members of our union, or misses people who are members. And the ways that we've caught this are by, for example, like visiting a classroom repeatedly to try to get someone to become a dues-paying member by signing a union card, and then discovering like that person actually is not eligible for our union. And so just like wasting union resources by like haphazardly or maliciously, unclear or a combination, providing us with unclean data. So this is something like that's an example. Another example is that we discovered that a member of the bargaining team was not on our member rolls, and they were obviously an adjunct who was eligible for union membership. So these are huge red flags that reveal to us the data isn't accurate. To what degree is unclear, and it's just a huge time suck for us to have to go in and try to like discover which of the people in here might not actually work here or anymore, or they're actually full time, or which means they're eligible for AAUP but not our union, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we filed an unfair labor practice dues as well, which we also won.
Yeah.
I don't know, Vasiliki, what else do you want to add
Well,
to
I just
this?
want to say that we legally represent, right, adjuncts at Portland State University. We're what's called the exclusive representative. And so we have a legal responsibility and obligation, right, to administer a contract, and of course to engage in negotiations over a successor agreement. And we can't actually do that job if we don't know who is in our unit, who's represented by us, and how we can find them. So this is really essential to our role and responsibility as exclusive representative. And that was recognized by the administrative law judge, and I think had a lot to do with why we prevailed on that particular count in the unfair labor practice.
Right, which I guess maybe I'll add for the real heads out there that this is a violation of House Bill 2016, which requires employers to provide data to their unions to represent the members in certain timelines and with certain levels of like quality and pieces of information delivered to us. So it was an obvious violation of a pretty like explicit and clear piece of legislation.
If you just tuned in, this is Labor Radio, KBOO Portland. You've been listening to Erica Thomas and Vasiliki Touliotis, instructors at Portland State University and leaders of the Portland State University Faculty Association. If you found this useful, please consider supporting KBOO, the non-corporate community radio. Go to kboo.fm and make a donation.
All right. So beside the egregious manipulation of your union rights, we're facing now what PSU president announced that the university would have to go through major restructuring, eliminating as many as 19 departments. And of course, this move on the part of the administration impacts all workers at the university, not just adjunct faculty, but all the seven different unionized workers. And it mirrors the austerity program of universities across the state and the nation. The PCC unions are demanding that the governor, Kotek, call a special legislative session to tax the rich and fully fund education. The unions also say the money is there and too much money goes to administration. So what's the story and how is PSUFA responding?
The university has been saying this narrative, the austerity narrative, austerity budgeting and like scarcity narrative that they have, is indefinite. Like you can go back and you can look at like many points. I've been working at PSU off and on since 2008. I am an alum. I got my master's degree, my MFA. at PSU. So I have been in the university since, for a long time, and this is always the narrative. They'll point at different sorts of, like indicators or whatever. So like right now, part of the narrative is that, quote unquote, enrollment is down, and that's why this is happening. But it's down by a small percentage as a result of COVID. And it just doesn't really add up to the drastic and regressive budgeting tactics that they would like to use. I mean, I also would say that considering their willingness to break the law for union busting outcomes, I would actually not be surprised if this is part of a larger this restructuring is part of like a larger manipulation of the structure of the university to sort of like break up the growing power of unions on campus. That has been a suspicion that I've had for a long time, although I don't have any like direct evidence of that. But anyway, the austerity budgeting is a narrative that has been continuously brought up for a long time at the university, and really doesn't have much like concrete evidence, as well as like the projections that they're making, which are based off of they're very speculative budgetary projections into the future. So they're like using these like speculative tools to like imagine future budget needs. And their strategy for dealing with possible budget shortfalls, unlike going in and getting more money from Salem, like sort of doing lobbying that brings more money into the education system, public education system. Their idea is to reduce the programs and reduce the offerings, services, faculty members, the like re to reduce the quality of the education. And then somehow by some magic that's supposed to address these small dips in enrollment. And it's like it doesn't make any sense at all. So when you look at it from that framework, it's kind of like I've been describing this as like the logic that private equity uses when it comes into corporations. And then strips them for parts, and then poof, they go out of business because all of the value proposition. And again, I hate to use the business language about this is a public school, so I don't agree with any of the applying business logic to any of this at all. But if you do look at it from a business standpoint, imagine if you remove a bunch of the value from an institution by like reducing the quality of the thing that you do, which for us is educating people, and then you expect somehow that that's going to write the budget instead of reinvesting in it, making it better, giving people the support they need, and offering students the high quality education that they deserve. Working class people in Oregon who go to our schools and people from out of state who are working class and come to go to school at PSU deserve those things. And it's not going to be an attractive school for them to go to in the first place if they keep reducing the quality. So it just like doesn't have any like logical, it doesn't have any logical sense, the plan.
Yeah, and then I'd like to add to this that our position as a union has been very consistent over the past few years, and that is that the university is not allowed to budget to balance their budget on the backs of adjuncts. They owe us fair pay and dignified work conditions, regardless of what the university's budgetary situation is. They can chop from the top, they can redistribute resources, they can generate new resources, as Erica said, in order to pay their faculty members fairly. And I think it's very important when we're thinking about adjuncts in particular in this narrative of the necessity of budget austerity, is to remember how little of PSU's budget we actually are. So in the academic year 2023-2024, which is the last year that I have this data for, adjunct faculty members at PSU were 2.6% of the university's overall expenditures. And we teach over a third of student credit hours. So we're incredibly cheap for the university, and that the idea that they're going to budget they're sorry, balance their budget on at our expense is incredibly idiotic and unethical and deeply, deeply exploitative.
I would also just add one more thing, which is that their salaries increase at a rate that is wildly higher percentage than any faculty members, either adjunct faculty or full-time faculty.
Right, and
The
you by
administrators, that
theirs you
is.
means upper level administrators. Yes, I think it's really important that people know that President Ann Cutt is making $700,000 a year, and adjunct faculty, if they're teaching at their maximum, can w are going to make less than 30,000 at the university and not have benefits.
Wild. So you all are at this stage where you're going into mediation, and you've been engaged into a fr in really new high participation and militant contract campaign. So how are you preparing for a possible strike, and how you've been agitating and educating your members?
I can start with this. I mean, we do strategic planning a year in advance of bargaining. So we actually started planning this quite a long time ago. Obviously, that plan has to get revised as as things unfold. We start by doing a bargaining survey. We build a high sort of an organizing model, a bargaining team that is doing outreach. We're very communicative with members throughout the process, so we provide frequent bargaining updates. We have open bargaining, meaning that anyone can come and watch. Jamie, you come and watched bargaining many, many times, and many other community members and members of campus community. Students come and watch. So another thing we're doing is trying to remain in good communication with student organizations, doing things like shared classroom visits with the undergraduate organizers who just formed their first union on campus, unionizing actually the final ununionized portion of workers on campus. So we did shared classroom visits with an adjunct and a student organizer last school year. We have an active Instagram account where we're posting updates, and we try to do our best to invite people to public-facing events as often as we as often as we can. We have things like rallies. We did when we won our ULP, we hosted a rally and then sort of a march on the administrative offices and brought them like a giant copy of the unfair labor practice ruling, sort of like unfurled that in their office. So we're trying lots of different kinds of things, straightforward comms, just like regular emails, blog posts that update and summarize the previous bargaining sessions because many busy adjuncts can't make it to those. So we want to make sure that we're communicating often, both with faculty and students, coordinating with the other labor unions on campus, bringing in community partners. Strike school. We've had lots of strike school sessions. So we're offering adjuncts an opportunity to learn about the history of striking, things like PECPA, which you mentioned, the sort of timeline of bargaining and negotiations that apply to public employees, sort of teaching them and then deputizing those people. People to go out and communicate with, organize, have one-on-one member conversations with their coworkers, phone banking, classroom visit organizing, home visits, you name it. We're doing lots of different kinds of things. Did I miss anything, Vasiliki? I'm sure I did.
No, I would just say that we're trying to connect with every single member of the bargaining unit, of course, focusing on adjuncts who are contracted in the spring, because if a strike were to happen at this point, it would be in the spring. But we are trying to connect with every single adjunct teaching in spring term, and that's kind of a big that's a challenge, right? Because adjuncts are part-time workers. They might not teach on campus because they teach remotely. They might be on campus only for a few hours a week. So it's taken lots of creative outreach strategies, some of which Erica has mentioned, and also using kind of longstanding union outreach techniques like home visits, which have actually been very yeah, t-shirt days, and home visits to connect with our adjunct faculty members. And for many adjunct faculty, this has been the only time that they've actually ever spoken to another adjunct faculty member. And that in and of itself is very powerful. And the university has, of course, designed, you know, this faculty group adjuncts to never talk to each other. And so we are, that feels very subversive and important in this moment, is that we are actually talking to each other and bringing more and more adjuncts into contact with each other.
Yeah, actually. So, I mean, that is something that adjuncts are very alienated from the institution, like Vasiliki said, and also many of them teach remotely because they teach an online class. So they actually, some of them never come to campus, and they don't know anyone else that they work with. And so it is really a process of, it's been a huge lift for our union. It's a very difficult segment of workers to organize because their working conditions and also their economic conditions are wildly varied. Some people have like a full-time job where they are, you know, more or less financially supported by something else. And they do. I spoke with an adjunct over the weekend on the phone who was a consultant. And I said, why do you teach? And she said, you know, I really care about the students and I want to give back. So it's like, you know, there is this, you know, smaller segment of people who aren't economically, you know, precarious because they have other work. So it's very challenging to communicate with, and sort of, it's not a one size fits all type of bargaining unit. We really have to like do the listening part of the organizing and try to understand, like, why are you doing this work? Why do you care about it? You know, if it's not money, is there something else you care about? And it still needs to always go back to the economics. I mean, it's really important that we continue to say, like, you know, people do need to be paid for their work fairly, whether or not they have, you know, other work elsewhere, that we're not forgetting about the economics. But sometimes the thing that really activates a person might be job security, academic freedom, or even like something else, and trying to sort of like have those organizing conversations and really like hear what kind of adjunct am I talking to, is actually the alienation, the thing that feels the hardest for them, which has happened. I've had that conversation. Someone who lives somewhere else or far away from campus, and they teach online through Zoom or through literally just like a website canvas where we put course content, and they never even meet students face to face either. So it is a very alienated group of workers in a lot of ways. One thing that I didn't mention is the strike pledge, which I do want to make sure that we mention. We have circulated a strike pledge. It's still very much in progress. But are we at 35%? Is that right? The latest?
Something like that. I know it's over 30% of adjuncts teaching in the spring have signed the strike pledge.
Well, that brings me to the next question, which is, how do you gauge your members' readiness for a strike? What we call in a structure test. Maybe you could explain to listeners what a structure test is, but this is one of them, the strike pledge, right?
Yeah, we, I mean, I think I sort of rattled off all the things we're doing in a totally random order, but we actually did a quite a methodical sort of, we like the How to Strike and Win pamphlet, which we've done reading groups around. This is the Labor Notes pamphlet. Highly recommend for any organizers out there to read this, but it has a sort of like really methodical approach to turning the heat up over time by doing structure tests that are easy in the beginning, such as like wear your t-shirt to work, or like, you know, your union button, or sign your union card and become a member. And then it moves people up to, you know, more agitational, like participate in a march on the bus, or maybe observing bargaining might be in between those two things. So it's like ratcheting up of the intensity of the actions. And signing strike pledge is like pretty high up on that agitational scale. And so we have incrementally brought people to this point. We're definitely not where we need to be yet, just being really honest. If we are going to strike in spring, we need people to have signed the strike pledge, and we need to be in contact with those. And I would say, yeah, I would open it I don't want to talk too long on this. You are the bargaining chair, so.
I just want to add that that PSUFA has suffered from historically low membership rates because of the conditions that we've been talking about here and how difficult it is to organize and just like find adjunct faculty members. And we are looking at almost 60% membership for adjunct faculty teaching in spring term, which is a huge improvement on previous levels. And I think really shows that the organizing techniques that we've been using are working. And so that is also one of our structure tests, right, is our membership levels. In some parts of the university, that number is much higher. In some parts of the university, it's lower. The union has kind of different levels of connection with adjuncts in schools that we've been more historically active in. But it's a major improvement. And I imagine that the university is aware of that and nervous about it. And then, as Erica said, we have over 30% of adjuncts teaching in the spring have signed a strike pledge, and we are will continue to work to increase that number. And if we need to, you know, we will, once we get the number that we need, we will move towards a strike.
So what would be the impact of a strike on the college, the administration, the students, the community? What, how does a strike give you power to achieve your demands?
Well, our goal would be to disrupt university operations by withholding our labor. And of course, this we would only utilize that very powerful tool that we have of withholding our labor if the university wasn't meeting our demands. And we have very specific demands that are specified in the strike pledge around fair pay and job security and academic freedom.
Considering their main narrative about austerity budgeting, sort of the crafting of a narrative of economic downslide or whatever of the university, or this sort of reduced enrollment, sorry, that the university is basically is crafting this narrative that because of reduced enrollment, which, you know, it's a small dip in enrollment, that they have to cut all of these programs, and that they also can't give us the contract that we deserve. But many of the things we're asking for are free. They cost the university nothing. And so it's actually just like another indictment that that they don't really care about. They don't care about the workers. They don't care about the students, because some of the things that that we are fighting for actually don't even cost the university anything. And again, like Vasiliki said, we are also really cheap for the university. So this is not a place to save money. It's not going to be a good place for the university to cut. But nonetheless, many of the things we're asking for are simply the ability to grieve academic freedom, impingement on academic freedom. That doesn't cost the university anything. So just basically, I think what it would mean is that it would show members of the campus community that when we organize and we fight together, that we will win these demands.
All right. So you've talked to us a little bit about the timeline. Thinking about a possible strike in the spring. Maybe you could say anything you want our listeners to know about your next steps and how our listeners can support you and keep in touch.
Well, I would say, I mean, mostly we have been, the main call we've been giving is to have people show up for bargaining, because we have open bargaining, and that is very agitational. And so that's been very helpful, and we're appreciative for people to show up for that. We are no longer in bargaining. We're in mediation. Or sorry, we're no longer in open bargaining sessions. We're in mediation, which is closed sessions. So I would say that at this stage, if you are a member of the PSU community, now is an excellent time to reach out to your union and offer to join in the organizing efforts. I think there will be opportunities for members of the public to join us in upcoming you know, events, physical in-person events on campus, where the number of people who show up actually matters quite a bit, makes the university nervous, likelier likelier to settle a fair contract with us. Yeah, I would say also, like, right now there's an excellent object lesson happening in Portland with the PCC staff and faculty who are on strike, that is what the campus can look like in spring term if the university does not give us a fair contract. And I would just ask that community members, members of other labor unions, and also just people who care about public education can prepare to join us on the picket line. So just knowing that that's coming, that we will be building to a credible threat of strike. And should we go on strike, we really need the community to show up on those picket lines. There will be opportunities to donate to a strike fund and to, you know, bring supplies and people and signs to picket lines at PSU. Vasiliki, what else?
Well, I was just going to say that we'll most certainly be having informational pickets throughout the spring term.
Yes.
As we escalate towards a strike, and you know, the number of people that show up to those do matter. It does matter. So we would love to have members of you know, the labor family and PSU community come and support adjunct faculty and students at PSU, right? Because ultimately this fight for better faculty working conditions is also a fight for student learning conditions.
How do listeners keep in touch?
I think the general public, you can follow us on Instagram is the easiest way. PSU FA Local 3571. If people are interested in emailing, you can email communications at psufa.org, particularly if you have, if you're wanting to reach our executive council and bargaining team, you can start by emailing me.
So Instagram, PSUFA 3571, email communications at psufa.org. All right. Well, that wraps it up for this evening's show. You've been listening to Erica Thomas and Vasiliki Tehuliotis, co-chairs of the Portland State University Faculty Association. I'm Jamie Partridge. This is Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.